With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to a Cinematic Universe Megasode, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, which you can find at cinematicmultiverse.com. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and I'll be bringing you a truncated, or maybe this week not so truncated, version of the show to bridge the gap between our Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 episodes and our X-Men 2 episode. I'll be giving you my reactions to the comics that Seb and James recommended on the last two podcasts. So from our Avengers podcast, those are The Ultimates and Astonishing X-Men Volume 1. And then from our Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 podcast, we've got the Maximum Security crossover as well as Rocket Raccoon. But before any of that, and there's going to be a lot, let's take a look at some of the comic book movie and TV news that has broken over the past couple of weeks. Now, it's going to be pretty TV heavy this week because there is a lot of TV stuff that's happening. But we'll start off with the brief couple of bits of movie news. And there's one that is really the most interesting, and that is Hellboy. So we are getting a new Hellboy film. And as recently as about a month ago, that sounded very improbable because Guillermo del Toro said that he was meeting with Ron Perlman and Mike Mignola to talk about the possibility of Hellboy 3. Apparently they met and decided it wasn't going to happen and went on their way. And we kind of assumed that that was it for Hellboy movies. But that's not what's happening. Because instead of a Hellboy 3, we are going to get a reboot of the franchise. Neil Marshall is expected to direct. Now, most recently, Neil Marshall has been best known for directing some episodes of Game of Thrones, but he's directed films like Dog Soldiers and The Descent, and is a pretty accomplished horror director. Apparently, this movie is going to have a more of a horror vibe than the previous Hellboy films, and is going to be R-rated. And the star stepping into Ron Perlman's shoes is David Harbour, who we have been talking about as a potential Cable before Josh Brolin was cast. I'm not quite sure how to feel about this news. I'm not like a massive Hellboy fan or anything. I would have liked to have seen the conclusion of the original Hellboy trilogy with Del Toro and Perlman. However, I like Neil Marshall. I like David Harbour. And I think ultimately I trust Mike Mignola has the... I trust he has the kind of the right instincts for what to do with his character and certainly the best intentions. So... Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see whether this is a good idea or a bad one. I just think it's a shame that we won't see the conclusion of that trilogy before we go in this direction. So, yeah, that is the Hellboy reboot, which is now coming, but with a different director and a different star. The only other movie news is that we got the final trailer for Wonder Woman. Now, this is a film that increasingly online people have been suggesting hasn't been getting quite the marketing push that it deserves or it was expected or is in line with some of the other DC properties. I can't say that I had noticed that being a thing other than that maybe the trailers weren't as eye-catching as Suicide Squad's trailers. and I don't know, it's hard to compare to Batman v Superman. And so I'm not sure. There might be some truth in it, there might not be. This is the final trailer. This is the one that's going to be playing in cinemas between now and when the movie debuts in not too long now, just I think less than a month. And yeah, I thought it was really good, like the best we've seen of the film so far. I'm really hopeful for this movie. I really hope that this is where DC turns it around and gives us a character who we can kind of grasp onto and go, oh yeah, there we go. That's the Tony Stark or the Steve Rogers of the DC universe. That's the character we want to we can anchor ourselves to as this franchise progresses. And then obviously just from a female superhero point of view, female led blockbuster point of view in general, and blockbuster directed by a woman, you would like for this film to succeed so it isn't used as an excuse to not make these kinds of films in the future. That would be the biggest travesty of all of this. So fingers crossed for Wonder Woman, but I thought this last trailer was really good, and hopefully the audiences show up for it when it arrives in a few weeks' time. Okay, we'll move over to the TV side of things now, and the first bit, we'll stick with trailers. There was a teaser trailer for The Defenders. So obviously this is the Netflix series that's bringing together Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist. We also, obviously, Claire Temple's going to be showing up. We saw Elektra in the trailer. We saw Sigourney Weaver's villain, who's increasingly looking like she's going to be the leader of the Hand. But we're still not sure on that. The trailer has a few jokes at Danny Rand's expense. I thought that the chemistry between Jessica Jones and Matt Murdock was really strong, and we already know that Luke Cage works well with Jessica Jones. So I'm looking forward to seeing all of these characters bounce off each other in that show. There's a corridor fight, and there is a great joke about Jessica Jones's scarf. So I was really pleased with the first look at that show, and I hopefully it will reverse the trend for me of liking every Marvel Netflix series less than the one that came before it. Hopefully that will buck that trend. At this point, I don't see The Defenders being worse than Iron Fist, but who knows? Okay, we'll move over to the broadcast networks now, and there are lots of TV renewals and cancellations and new series orders going on at the moment. It's that time of year for the TV networks in the US. Some of this information may no longer be up to date by the time you're listening to this podcast, because things move pretty fast in this week. So I'll give you the information as I have it right now. Most of the stuff is confirmed. There's a couple of shows that we're still waiting to hear on the fate on. We'll start with the CW stuff. We already knew that Supergirl, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Arrow, and also Riverdale were all returning. The CW has also picked up iZombie for another season, so if that's a show that you're watching, then good news, that's back as well. The CW has also ordered the Black Lightning series. So that means that Black Lightning will be on the CW. It was developed for Fox to begin with. It's now on the CW with all of those other shows. And while it was kind of intimated early on that this show would not cross over with the other DC properties, I would find it hard to believe that they will have one show on the networks that's not crossing over with the others, and all of the rest getting to play with each other. I think Black Lightning will be a character we'll see cross over with the other DC shows next year. So Black Lightning's happening. That's a good thing. Over on Fox, Gotham has been renewed. Great for people who are still watching Gotham, I guess. If you're still watching Lucifer, that's still on the air, apparently. And I said I'd never mention it again, but Krypton has been ordered. A series has been ordered by Sci-Fi. A show that we are not certain on yet at time of recording is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That show is most definitely still on the bubble, as it has been for the last couple of years at this time of year. I read an excellent website called TV by the Numbers that has like a renewal cancellation index for all of the shows, and it gave Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a 60% chance of renewal. So we're expecting probably it to be coming back, but there's been some weird decisions, some unexpected cancellations and renewals already from some of the networks for some of the non-superhero related shows. So there is a chance that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will disappear. Obviously, we've got some other comic book, some other Marvel Cinematic Universe TV shows coming to ABC and its affiliates. We've got The Inhuman Show, and we've got Cloak and Dagger coming to Freeform. So there are different shows coming. So it would be less of a surprise this year for Marvel to get out of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. business, given that they've got Marvel replacements coming down the pipeline. We will get to Inhumans at the end of this.
Breaking news alert. This is Joe, mid-edit of this podcast. Yes, I edit the mini-sodes and mega-sodes as well to edit out the stupid stuff I say. Twitter says that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been renewed for Season 5. So if you were hanging on every word for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for Season 5, it's happening. And ignore everything I just said. Back to the present.
Also on Fox, Gifted, that's the X-Men show directed by Bryan Singer. We knew that that show had been ordered to series, but there has been a teaser trailer released this week, and apparently we're getting a full trailer for the show on Sunday, so that's something to look forward to. We might be discussing that on our next podcast. We've now found out that the main family, the Stephen Moyer, Amy Acker family in the show have the surname Strucker. So whether that's going to have any connections to Hydra and the Von Strucker characters that we know from the comics and from the MCU, we'll have to wait and see. I would say probably not, but it seems like an odd name choice to go with, given the obvious connections that comic book fans are going to make. But there's, you know, you can't rule it out because the Marvel and Fox are kind of collaborating on their TV stuff now, so it might be that Marvel has allowed certain Hydra elements to be used in that show. I can't imagine why they would, but let's not rule it out. The mutant characters that we know are going to be appearing are Eclipse, Blink, Polaris, and Thunderbird. They're all the named mutant characters who have been confirmed on the show. So yeah, hopefully we'll be able to see a bit more of all of those once the trailer is released on Sunday. Over to the cable networks now, and Donald Glover is producing a Deadpool animated series for FXX. That is the sister network of FX and Fox. I think it's where It's Always Sunny airs and where The League used to air. Donald Glover, after starring with Zazie Beetz in Atlanta, now Zazie Beetz is in Deadpool 2, and he is producing a Deadpool animated series. Apparently we're going to get 10 episodes of that show in 2018, and animated Deadpool, it seems like that character should exist in a cartoon universe anyway, so that sounds great. And Donald Glover being involved, I mean, Donald Glover wrote for 30 Rock, was amazing on Community, wrote Atlanta, which is incredible. Donald Glover doing a Deadpool comedy is something that I will watch. I think I'm more excited about the Donald Gloverness of that than I am about the Deadpoolness. But yes, Deadpool animated series on FXX. God, I'm struggling with that. In 2018. I think if Seven James are listening back to this podcast, they'll probably be stunned that I've taken this long to get to this TV news. Because Judge Dredd is coming to TV. Entertainment Weekly reported this week that Judge Dredd Mega City 1 is a TV show that is in development, and we don't know an awful lot more about it yet, other than the idea is that it would be a show with Judge Dredd as the lead character, but that we would also get to see more of the city, that it would be more of a kind of ensemble, like city as a character kind of thing, with the satire put back in to the concept. The producers said something about how like they felt like the two film versions had lacked the satire, and that was something that they were going to try and put back into it. So expect it to be kind of equal parts light and dark, and that there will be jokes and there will be a satirical streak running through there. It's very early in development, but the big announcement of this was in Entertainment Weekly and was drummed up as if it was something that there was serious backers and investors making sure that this was going to happen. So we'll have to pay a bit more attention to that, but I think that'll be something that Seven James and I will be discussing on our main episode next week. Last couple of bits of TV news. The Tick, which is a show I'm very much looking forward to, is premiering on August 25th. That's an Amazon Prime show, so if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you'll be able to watch that. And, I mean, certainly in the UK, I think Amazon Prime is becoming near essential. American Gods and The Handmaid's Tale are on there right now if you're a UK TV watcher, and The Tick coming later in the year. I'd recommend getting signed up to that Amazon Prime. They'll send you your DVDs for free as well, free delivery next day. Amazon, if you're looking for a podcaster sponsor, you found one right here. And then finally, I had to leave this one to last because it is just incredible, isn't it? The Inhumans, the TV show that is supposedly going to debut its first couple of episodes on an IMAX TV screen, unveiled the first picture of its cast, and it is jaw-droppingly terrible. I think Medusa, played by Surinder Swan, is probably the character that will get the most laughs in this purple outfit with this horrible, very obvious, like, red ginger wig. Anson Mount as Black Bolt looks like he's halfway between biker and BDSM gear in this leather Black Bolt outfit with a very serious and dour look in his face. And just the whole look of the team together looks very budget. Looks, I don't know, just you look at it and go, wow, no wonder they didn't want to make this into a movie. Inhumans, of course, is being showrun by Scott Buck, who also ran Iron Fist, so that is not exactly a ringing endorsement for the show. And yeah, after seeing this first image and knowing everything else, any hope I had for this project has kind of been sapped. And I can't believe that those costumes are going to be showing up on a big IMAX screen. The show is going to be taking place primarily in Hawaii and is going to be kind of like a traditional take on the Inhumans royal family, which is kind of infighting and betrayal and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure they're going for a kind of Game of Thrones meets Marvel vibe. But wow, honestly, this image, if you haven't seen it, you must Google it immediately. But I imagine everyone who's listening to this probably has seen it and laughed an equal amount to what I did when I first saw it. So yeah, The Inhumans, I think that's turning up on IMAX screens in either August or September before it goes to ABC. And yeah. Okay, we'll move on now to this week's comic book recommendations. Okay, I'm just going to open up my Marvel Unlimited app on the iPad because this is what I've been glued to for the past 2 or 3 weeks, working my way through all of these comics. And I think we'll start off with the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 recommendations because I think there's probably a little bit less to talk about with those. I think I'm going to want to dig into the Avengers ones a little bit more. But spoiler alert, 4 comics this week that I enjoyed all of them to a various extent. We'll start off with Maximum Security, which was recommended by James. And for the primary reason that it's a Marvel big kind of comics crossover that features Ego, the Living Planet. So I didn't read all of the tie-ins to this. What I basically read was there is a kind of tee-up issue called Maximum Security Dangerous Planet Number 1. And then there was a 3-issue Maximum Security crossover event. There's lots of tie-ins, not quite as many as you'd get in any current Marvel crossover event, but there's a bunch of those as well, which I didn't read, but didn't really feel massively essential. I think the best issue is actually this Dangerous Planet one that tees everything up. It's all very cosmic. There's not many characters that are like very recognisable, familiar Marvel that show up. Professor X is in there, but otherwise it's kind of like there's Lilandra, the Shi'ar leader, and then there's lots of Skrulls, and there's a new race called the, I think they're called the Kul. There is a team of Skrulls who are led by Professor X because they are mutant Skrulls, and I think they're called Cadre K. The team that they work on together. But basically, the first issue starts, and it's actually a great kind of tie into the recommendation on the last podcast from James, the Trial of Galactus, Trial of Reed Richards issues, because it's basically that same kind of intergalactic council, but this time they are talking about the way that humans keep interfering with the rest of the universe and the way that people from Earth, and it, like, even in humans and Thor and the X-Men, and there's various, like, there's various members on different kind of teams that travel around the galaxy. I think they mentioned Quasar and characters like that, who are basically going around and interfering with things that they don't necessarily need to be interfering in. And sure, sometimes they do good, but sometimes they don't do good, and sometimes they're responsible for bad stuff. And they want to put humanity on trial, basically, and put them to death. As that's happening, Ego the Living Planet attacks and wipes out this world. And what basically happens is a lot of space adventuring mixed with all of these alien races debating what should happen to humanity. And they basically decide, I think Professor X and this cadre K try and get involved to stop Ego. And they do manage to kind of incapacitate him. But what everyone decides is that humanity is guilty, and that this is further proof of it, and they're going to punish humanity in some way. But this new alien race that have turned up, who are just kind of entering into this council for the first time, say, hey, we've got a better idea of what to do. And that's what leads into the big crossover. So basically, what they decide to do is turn Earth into a prison planet, and send all of the worst kind of other aliens from the rest of the galaxy to Earth, and just turn Earth into a prison. And so the Marvel heroes who live on Earth are going to have to fight these kind of evil aliens that turn up. But the best they can do is kind of keep them down there and live with them. And they're just going to keep turning up and keep turning up and keep turning up. And Ronan the Accuser, so there is another Guardians of the Galaxy tie-in there, is sent to Earth to kind of watch over them, and as like the warden. What becomes clear, though, is that there is one kind of secret extra thing that is sent to Earth, and that is Ego, who's been kind of reconstituted into baby form and sent to Earth, except he's not quite stable, and he starts to expand and slowly take over the Earth, and he is going to basically, not really in a malevolent way, but just in a clinging to life kind of way, slowly take over the Earth and kind of absorb it, and eventually Earth will become all of Ego. Now, that's not the plan of the Intergalactic Council, but it turns out that they are being manipulated, and it is, it's Ronan, and it's the Kree, and it's a character called the Supreme Intelligence, who I don't really know, is like a big angry head with like tentacles, and he seems Kree connected, and seems like a pretty bad dude, and basically all the Marvel heroes have to kind of first of all figure out what's going on, and then second of all kind of try and defeat the bad guys and prove to the Intergalactic Council what's I don't think that's their actual name, by the way, that's just what I keep calling them, prove to the council that they are that this evil plan has been going on. And it basically involves this guy called the US Agent, who is this kind of real arsehole, kind of wouldn't be out of place in the Ultimates version of a Captain America, who is a bit of a dick, works for the government, and doesn't like the rest of the superheroes, has some past, I think, with being like a stand-in Captain America or something like that. But seems to have a grudge against everyone else, but is kind of forced to team up with the rest of the Avengers and the Fantastic Four, and basically there are like every hero that you can think of for Marvel turns up at some point here, and is involved in some way with either trying to stop Ego from expanding or taking down Ronan and the Kree. Or, I mean, the Silver Surfer turns up at one point, and he tries to absorb Ego and take him off the planet, and then Quasar has to come and do it. And it's, basically, it's lots of plot, not much character, but I found myself having a lot of fun with it. Like, it's basically one revelation after another going, oh, you thought it was this? No, it's that! That guy's actually involved! Oh, no, wait, and that guy's actually involved! And, what if we tell you that that guy's actually that guy? And it's just, there's lots of that. And I kept going, oh, huh, so that person's actually... Oh, no, it's not Ego, so it's... And in the end, I didn't really care, but I did have fun reading it. And it was interesting reading Ego the Living Planet here as, in contrast to what he is in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, he is kind of a... a misunderstood baddie or a not all out and out baddie. James compared him to Galactus. That makes a lot of sense. Ego is kind of this. He's been driven mad, I think, by the Supreme Intelligence, and is lonely, and is kind of the destruction that he brings in the Dangerous Planet issue is not entirely his fault. And when he's on Earth, he's literally just expanding on Earth to survive. So he's kind of like a tragic character here, but a bad guy, essentially just because of what he is forced to do. But yeah, so it wasn't really digging into Ego as a character, but it was interesting seeing him depicted in a different way to the movie. And there's no kind of human form here. He is literally, well, there's the brief baby form, but he is mostly planet. Mostly face on a giant orb throughout this, and lots of tentacles again, and lots of flying around the universe. Ego can move his entire planet here, which I don't think is something he could do in Guardians of the Galaxy. I think he could just send his Kurt Russell form away. But yeah, so that was Maximum Security, which I enjoyed. Like I say, lots of plot, not much character, but the plot is fun. I guess it could be fun to read that with all of the tie-ins, but I don't think you need them. I think I got my fill of what I needed from those four issues. We'll move on to Rocket Raccoon now. This is written and drawn by Scotty Young, and I think there are other artists as well as you go on. Scotty Young stopped doing the art from issue 6 onwards, and it is Jake Parker who steps in for issue 6, and then from issue 7 onwards there is another artist again, Felipe Andrade. So Seb recommended that I should read the first 5 issues of this and then the second issue of a Groot series from the following year. I nearly got confused and read the wrong one. I almost read issue 2 of Rocket Raccoon and Groot, which is from 2016. So basically how this works is there is a 12 issue Rocket Raccoon series in 2014. There is a solo Groot series in 2015, which I think lasts for 6 issues, and then a Rocket Raccoon and Groot series, which started in 2016. But yeah, so what I did was read the first 6 issues of the Groot series and then the one-off Groot issue 2 that James, that Seb also recommended on our Guardians episode. There's not a huge amount to say about this other than that it is really, really fun. I mean, Scotty Young's artwork is perfect for this. The first 4 issue story arc at the start of Rocket Raccoon is, it basically feels like Looney Tunes kind of stuff. Like there is a big epic shootout fight sequence at one point where the violence is just absolutely hilarious. Rocket is a really fun character, very similar to how he is in the movies, that he is kind of quipping and he's angry and he's aggressive and he's kind of a good and a bad guy at the same time. But he's also kind of got some trauma in his history, and he's a bit bummed out about being the only member of his kind. And there is a glimmer of hope at the start of this series, in that he is framed for a series of murders, and he takes himself into custody to kind of try. He allows himself to be captured so he can kind of find out what's been going on, because there is he believes that he has been set up by someone who looks just like him, and so that means it's probably someone of his species. I don't think I'll spoil the reveals of what's going on there. There is like 2 reveals at the end of issue 4 that play into that doppelganger stuff, and I would just recommend reading to get into that. But it's really fun, and these issues take like 3 or 4 minutes to read each. Like that's it. And in fact, issue 5 takes even less time to read, because it is an issue where, aside from a couple of pages, the only words spoken are "I am Groot." Groot is a part of this series. He's not quite as major as Rocket. Seb said it was kind of like it was a Rocket and Groot series. And he's right, it is, but just by virtue of the characters that they are, if both characters are in the series, Rocket is probably going to dominate. And issue 5 is just Rocket and Groot kind of like on a camping trip. They look like they're like scout leaders, and there are like 5 alien kids who are being told bedtime stories around the campfire by Rocket and Groot. And Groot tells the story throughout this issue, which is just him saying, "I am Groot," while we see the stuff of like unfold on the page in a series of panels, and it's like Rocket and Groot searching for a treasure and kind of unlocking different little pieces that they need to fill in their puzzle to find this ultimate treasure. And again, there's a fun little reveal at the end of the issue that I won't ruin because it's really funny. There is a really cute part that one of these aliens is a kind of a leaf creature, and he understands everything that Groot says, which is really sweet. Seb didn't recommend me to read issue 6, but because I'd forgotten which issues he told me to read, I just kept reading up to issue 6. And I'm actually glad I did. I don't know whether this starts off the next arc or anything, or whether this is self-contained as well. But I'm just going to speak about it for the first couple of pages, which happen to feature an important character for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 again. Rocket is flying around a planet, firing missiles at these kind of giant bug creatures that are crawling around on its surface. And
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fires these missiles at them, finds the guy at the end who owes him the money for doing the job, gets paid, flies away, and as he's flying away, we see that the planet he has been on is Ego, and he says, "See you, Ego, glad I could help you with your lice problem." And I thought that that was an absolutely genius gag involving Ego. The rest of the issue features Cosmo, the space dog that we met in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. So yeah, lots of fun little bits and pieces that tie into both Guardians films across these two recommendations. And then the last issue that Seb recommended me read, which was Groot issue 2, from a different series, slightly more recent series. Again, a self-contained story, and again, really sweet and really fun. This is Groot. He seems to be lost in space. So again, you can read this in like 5 minutes because it's primarily just Groot speaking. Occasionally other people do speak, but it's just such a fast read, which is why I think I'm probably going to read the rest of the Rocket Raccoon stuff and the Groot stuff and the Rocket and Groot stuff, because it's so fun and yeah, no kind of time burden whatsoever. But this is Groot in this issue flashing back to when he was sent to prison and got thrown into solitary confinement with Rocket. and Rocket kind of not wanting anything to do with him, but Rocket kind of identifying a kindred spirit and trying to befriend Rocket. And there's a really nice moment where Rocket stands up for Groot for the first time, and where Rocket starts to understand what Groot is saying, and Groot like cries with happiness because finally there's someone that understands him. And I would say it's very inventive. I think more so in the comics than in the films, that across all of these comics that Seb recommended here, that you can kind of, when Groot is speaking, you can tell what he's saying most of the time. You can get a gist of what he's saying. I think they do a better job of it here than they do with Rocket in the movies filling in his sentences for him. You get more of a sense of Groot as a character here. And the friendship between Rocket and Groot is very sweet. And I'm glad Seb recommended this single issue, because it is a whole heap of fun. And it basically ends with Groot travelling back across the galaxy trying to find Rocket again. After he's finished his flashback, but bumping into someone else instead. So that was Rocket Raccoon and a single issue of Groot, which again I enjoyed a lot and would recommend readers at home pick up on. I mentioned this at the start, but all of these comics that we're talking about today are all available on Marvel Unlimited. So if you're an Unlimited subscriber, that's probably the best and the most cost effective way to do it, even if you just subscribe for a month and then cancel. Okay, we'll move on now to the Avengers recommendations. And the big recommendation from our Avengers episode was The Ultimates. And I'm going to leave that to last, because I think it's the meatiest one, the one that is going to require the most getting into. Seven James also said, if I could, to read some Astonishing X-Men. So I did. I read the first six issues of Astonishing X-Men, which is written by Joss Whedon and drawn by John Cassaday. And so this is, I believe, the series that picked up after the Grant Morrison New X-Men run. I think kind of the comic that replaced New X-Men. Obviously, I only read the start of that. So in terms of being thrown into X-Men continuity again, I was a little bit lost as to where it all fit together, but vaguely had an idea of where I was. But basically, it seems like Professor X is alive, I think, but not like taking a sabbatical from the X-Men, and he has left his school in the hands of Emma Frost. Emma Frost is now in a relationship with Cyclops after the death of Jean Grey. Wolverine's not massively happy about that, but he is back and on the team as well. Kitty Pryde is kind of our POV character. She comes back to the school and sees all this going on, and then there's Beast as well in the main team. So this is a group of characters who are kind of our X-Men team. They're running the school, but also they're investigating some strange goings-on outside of the school, because there is a doctor who turns up, Dr. Kavita Rao, who announces that she has discovered a cure for the mutant gene, and that any mutants who want to be cured of their mutation can sign up to... have their mutation taken away, basically. But it's complicated because there is also a warrior alien character called Ord, who kind of starts some trouble that attracts the X-Men's attention at the same time as Dr. Rao is making her announcement, which leads to the thought that they are kind of... the two things are connected, this warrior alien character and the mutant cure. Spoiler, they are... I won't massively get into how, because I didn't. It's this lots of complicated plotting and stuff. But yeah, I'm not sure that all of the plot was the stuff that I was most interested in here. This felt to me just fun because it was like a Joss Whedon TV show, but in comic form. I felt like it took a few issues for him to find. To find his footing a little bit. The first issue seemed very ambitious with some of the kind of the cutting between different scenes on the same page and I would say formally ambitious, and didn't quite land for me until I got a couple of issues in and kind of got to grips with who the characters were and where we were and what Joss Whedon was doing with the comic. But basically, once I got into it, I was really enjoying it. It was the stuff kind of like big scary villain confronts innocent victims, and that scene is undercut with a laugh, but still plays out as genuinely terrifying. That kind of stuff was in there, and complex characters who can go from making a joke 1 minute to kind of feeling quite desperate and really identifiable. I mean, there's a character who turns up midway through this run that is quite significant to one of the other characters. And I won't spoil who that is, because I think it's the standout of this run when you read it, when these characters meet each other again. But I was really moved and touched by that part of the comic, despite not really knowing either of the characters and their history, other than I kind of knew that they had a stronger connection in the past in X-Men. But I found it really hit home for me. And also, there's lots of kind of like, there's a really fun cliffhanger at the end of the sixth issue, and it felt like a comic that after every issue you wanted to start reading the next one straight away, because it had you hooked. And not with, I think sometimes, especially in Marvel comics, I find that there's like a there's a temptation to, you get to the last page and you go, oh, and it's this guy, and it's this villain, or it's that person, and you go, oh, okay, so that person's in the next issue, so that's why you want me to read the next issue. I didn't feel like that was the way that this story was hooking me. I felt like it felt like someone who had worked in TV, who knew that at the end of every episode you had to want your viewers to come back and read the next one. That feels like a more natural fit than even a movie writer moving over and doing comics. Like, TV writers, you would assume, are quite well positioned to go over and write successful comics, just because of the nature of their episodic nature, I guess. And yeah, Joss Whedon does a really good job here. I wouldn't say I was like completely blown away by it, or like found it completely groundbreaking, or surprised me massively like some comics have in the past, but it definitely had me hooked in and wanting to read more X-Men. And I would say more so than the Grant Morrison new X-Men. I think that this was, once I had found my feet with it a couple of issues in, that this was more my speed of what I want from a comic. Still, even with this more modern stuff, I still don't feel like I'm massively interested in the X-Men in comics. I'm not sure why that is. I can't really explain it, because I am interested in them in films. But I guess when this series starts with, oh, and we found a cure, and I go, isn't the mutants not being mutants anymore? Isn't that like the setup for most X-Men stories? It didn't feel particularly fresh or exciting, but I don't know whether it did when the comic first came out. But I'm just reading out of the corner of my eye that the Mutant Cure plot was also the basis of the X-Men Last Stand movie, which I presume came after this comic, so maybe that's why it felt a bit too familiar. But yeah, in spite of all of that, those kind of other reservations about the setup for the plot and the very fact that it's an X-Men comic, I still found myself enjoying this a lot. And I do wonder whether I should at some point sit down and maybe read from the start of Grant Morrison's X-Men run to the end of Joss Whedon's. Or I think Warren Ellis finished off this run, so maybe that's where I should go up to. I don't know. Definitely current X-Men comics don't appeal to me, so I'd probably have to cherry-pick the good ones from the past. And This certainly, more than the 90s stuff that James has recommended, feels like somewhere that I could jump in. But we'll move on to our final recommendation now, and this is kind of the big one. 13 issues, The Ultimates. This was written by Mark Miller and drawn by art by Brian Hitch. And yes, this is the Ultimate Universe take on the Avengers. And I was absolutely enraptured by this comic. I can't say that I always enjoyed it, and I can't say that if I'd have been reading it at the time, it would have been what I wanted to see from these characters. But reading it as kind of a product of 2002, which is when it was released, a product of Marvel reimagining its characters, and of Mark Miller basically taking all of the big gunners from the Marvel Universe, the key members of the Avengers team, like the Avengers team that is there in the Avengers movie, are all in this comic. So we've got Captain America, we've got Thor, we've got the Incredible Hulk, we've got Iron Man, we've got Hawkeye, we've got Black Widow. There's also Giant Man and the Wasp, and Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch have some pretty funny brief cameos turning up a couple of times over the course of it. And we're going to pause from the Ultimates for a second, listeners. Breaking news on the Megasode. I've just seen a tweet from the Cinematic Universe account. The Hollywood Reporter has confirmed that Anya Taylor-Joy and Maisie Williams will be starring in the Josh Boone-directed New Mutants movie. Maisie Williams is playing Wolfsbane, Anya Taylor-Joy is playing Magic, and Sunspot, Cannonball, and Warlock are the other characters. So, as we thought, the news from like last year at this point has been confirmed. They're the characters that we're seeing in a New Mutants movie. Hey, that was fun, wasn't it? Breaking news on the Megasode. But back to the Ultimates. This is Mark Miller being very, very cynical about a super team of American heroes. All of these characters are American, I think, apart from Thor. And probably Black Widow, I'd imagine. So what I'll do is kind of break down how things start. Issue one is a flashback to Captain America in World War II and setting off on a mission. And it kind of sets the tone in that Captain America, I think, is potentially the biggest arsehole of this bunch. And I don't know whether this is Mark Miller kind of like... Well, no, I don't think it is, because... You could make the argument that Mark Miller is saying, look, Captain America is from a different era where he was kind of a poster boy for the US Army, coming in and saving the day, and wouldn't he be like some kind of jockey prick? There's like a big splash page here where Captain America bursts onto the battlefield and says, "What are you waiting for, ladies? Christmas?" And there's a lot of that kind of like... casual sexism from this character. There's the line about you think the A on my helmet stands for France in one of the very last issues, when it's suggested that he might surrender, and he just comes off as a complete jerk in this flashback issue where he's taking on some kind of Nazi Hydra affiliated bad guys. We then come back to New York, and in the second issue, we meet Nick Fury and Bruce Banner, and they talk about how they're kind of assembling this team. I think at this point, from what they say, the only other superheroes that have been established in the Ultimate Marvel Universe are the X-Men and Spider-Man, and that they are both like widely despised in the Ultimate Universe by the public, and that the idea is that Nick Fury is going to put together this superhero team that is liked by the public, and so he is trying to get Bruce Banner to recreate the super soldier serum so they can create a new Captain America. This is before they find out that Captain America's in the ice, that they can revive him, and they've got one. But that's the idea, and so Bruce Banner's kind of working on that. He's become the Hulk before, but he's kind of managed to cure it, and he's kept it at bay, and this Hulk is a proper villain. There's no kind of two ways about it in this. He is a wrong'un. We'll get to more on the Hulk. But also working for Nick Fury's team are Hank Pym and is it Janet Pym? I think it is. Yeah. Are Ant-Man / Giant Man and the Wasp, and they are part of the team, and they're also working on the science. Bruce Banner's this very jealous guy who is not really liking that there are other people working on this whatsoever. We then meet Iron Man, who is kind of, he is a perpetual drunk superhero, who I think in this is terminally ill. He has a brain tumour or something, he reveals at some point. I'm not sure what the relevance of that was. I guess that was to do with the drinking and the doing something different than just profiteering off his business. I think that might be another bit of Mark Miller cynicism of, like, look, what would it take for a multi-billionaire in terms of a who's running an arms company to decide that he wants to be good and dress up in his suit and do good for the rest of the world. It probably is something like he's terminally ill and he's been forced to reassess things. So all of these characters are kind of brought onto this team, but it's a very, very artificially created team. Like, there's no one specifically for them to fight. They've been put together for PR purposes. And, like, the way that they are sold to the public is very PR-driven. Betty Ross, isn't it? She is brought in as kind of a PR consultant to sell the idea of the Ultimates to the outside world. So eventually Captain America wakes up and they kind of put together the team. Bruce Banner has essentially failed because... Captain America's returned and he hasn't been able to recreate the Super Soldier Serum. So there are no extra people to fight alongside Cap. Basically, their team is Iron Man, Giant Man, the Wasp, and Captain America. They don't have Thor because Thor is kind of he's a European kind of hippie peacenik character who... is very anti-violence, and, like, he is the actual God of Thunder, but he is not really keen on the US and their warmongering, what they want to do, and the only way that he will agree to turn up and fight with the Ultimates if and when they need him is if they, like, if the US agrees to put a load of funding out into the rest of the world. I've also skipped over a part where Captain America meets George W. Bush. So George W. Bush, in this comic that is coming out in 2002, is very specifically the president here, and Captain America salutes him, and I can imagine it's a weird moment to look on right now. It must have been an even weirder comics moment in 2002, but again, I think that's Mark Miller's kind of cynical, like, hey, look, Captain America, whether he's an asshole or not in this version that I'm writing, he's basically a guy that just fights for his country, and it doesn't matter whether their country's right or wrong or whatever, and here's President Bush, and he's going to salute the president and say he'll do anything that the president wants, because that's what America's symbol does. It's very uncomfortable to see that, but I think it's a very interesting take on the Captain America character. It's obviously, I think, a little bit symbolic of what Captain America the Winter Soldier does, with Steve Rogers finding his way in the current world, and the way that they've progressed that character to what he does in Civil War. I don't think this version of Captain America would ever get to the point that the movie version of Captain America does in Civil War. He would fight for the law of the land no matter what happens. But it's very interesting to see how these characters have been reimagined by Mark Miller in this setting that does feel, like Seb and James said, like more of an inspiration for the movies than the traditional versions. But in a way that is like, how would these characters exist in the modern day world? And then what the movies did was create more wholesome, outwardly heroic versions of these characters. The flaws are still there, but the flaws are smaller. So, like, the Tony Stark here, who is, like, just a cad and a drunk and doesn't really care about anything. He used to run an arms company. Like, yeah, that's there in the movies, but the heroism is what wins out. And Thor is, you know, he's going to go and fight for what's right, no matter what country wants him involved or whatever. And he's probably not going to betray his principles because the country has agreed to send some more money to somewhere else in the world. Giant Man is probably the biggest jerk of all. That's probably too light a word. Giant Man Hank Pym in this comic viciously beats his wife, Janet, who's probably the character that comes out of this the best, in that there's nothing, like, outwardly horrible about her character. I do think it's a shame that probably her defining moment in this series is being beaten by her husband. But it's like, it's a really nasty, malevolent thing where, like, she shrunk down and he sets his ants on her and nearly kills her. And he says, "You shouldn't have made me feel small, Jan." I mean, this is basically, I think, Mark Miller taking the kind of the grimmest aspects of all these characters from their history in the mainstream Marvel universe and bringing them over into this comic and going, wham, bam, look at all this spectacular, but also look what arseholes they are. I don't particularly like Mark Miller's current brand of cynicism, and I think I would struggle reading this comic in the present day if I'd have just come across it and kind of didn't have some of the other context around it and didn't have going in a kind of a knowledge that this was a cynical take on these characters from Mark Miller. Because if this was just Mark Miller turning up with a fresh take and I didn't know that coming in, I was like, oh, why is he... this is the worst take on all of these characters. It's horrible. But what it ends up being is, I think, a very interesting deconstruction of some of the more problematic aspects of a lot of these characters. The Hulk, when the Hulk goes off, is basically... basically almost like rape-fueled. Like, everything is very sexual with him. He is driven by... Freddie Prinze Jr. is out on a date with Betty Ross in the comic where the Hulk releases himself for the first time. To go back to Bruce Banner being an arsehole, and like, we know that Bruce Banner experiments on himself in the Marvel comics. In this comic, he experiments on himself specifically in this issue to bring out the Hulk so he can go and finally be something for the Ultimates to fight. I mean, so literally the first main thing that the Ultimates fight in this comic is the Hulk, because he's essentially done it so they will have someone to fight so that the Ultimates as a concept can exist. And that's when Thor turns up to help out. In the second big kind of action climax at the back half of these comics, like towards the 12th and the 13th issues, there is a Winter Soldier-esque takedown of S.H.I.E.L.D. from within by a... I'm not sure whether it is actually specifically Hydra or whether it's just... I think it's like... There's a suggestion that it's like... Not even a suggestion that it's... that they're all Chitauri. So they are kind of like Chitauri aliens who have shapeshifted and ingrained themselves into society and taken down S.H.I.E.L.D. from within. But that it's been going back to the war, and that the Nazi that Captain America was fighting back in World War II was a Chitauri back then as well. I'm not sure why, but again, I guess the Chitauri is the main villain at the end of the Ultimates. It's something that made its way over to the Avengers. In that final showdown, when the Hulk is unleashed again, he is motivated by Captain America, telling him that the Chitauri had been calling him a sissy. And that's when he goes after them and goes mad and takes out the Nazi that Captain America had been fighting from the Second World War by eating him. It's pretty grim in spots. It's really dark. Like I keep saying, it's really cynical. But it's a very interesting read to imagine, as I say, in the context of this comic coming out during the kind of American foreign policy that there was a fallout from 9/11, Mark Miller writing this comic book and turning a lot of these American icons of the comics into jerks. But jerks who eventually are kind of going out there and fighting to protect you and to save you, even if they're not particularly good guys themselves, and ultimately getting the job done, but with a lot of collateral damage. I'm sure that there is some really interesting takes on this comic that I would like to go out and read. I'm sure that the internet is filled with analysis of the Ultimates. I found it more interesting from that kind of cynical deconstruction of these characters. I found it more interesting from that aspect than I did for how it set up the Avengers, I think. But it's very clear how the Marvel Cinematic Universe kind of took this idea of these characters in the modern day, this fresh take on them in the modern day, and kind of softened what Mark Miller was doing here to still have heroes operating within this story. One thing I will add, we got a very funny tweet on the @CU podcast account yesterday from Alistair Mitchell, who said that he was really glad that the podcast had got him to read The Ultimates, but man, do very time-specific pop culture references age badly. And yes, that is such a great point, which I might have forgotten to bring up, but this comic makes... like I say, Freddie Prinze Jr. turns up at one point. There is a scene where they're all sitting around talking about who would play them in the movie versions, and some of the characters who do show up in the Avengers, like Sam Jackson is mentioned as the Nick Fury. Someone suggests, I think it's Steve Buscemi for Hulk, which he overhears and takes badly. And yeah, there is some of the pop culture references are fun and they are still relevant when you're reading now, but there are some other ones that absolutely clang and go, this comic was written in the early 2000s. So yeah, that's fun. That's fun as well. Good and bad. They are fun to read. But yeah, I would honestly recommend anyone go out and read The Ultimates if you haven't. I'm sure you all have, and that I'm the one who's late to the party here. I've just been waiting for Seven James to recommend it on the podcast. But it is fascinating, if not always enjoyable, because it's difficult to read these characters that you kind of inherently like as their worst versions. Like I said in the last podcast, I know that kind of Ultimate Reed Richards turned evil, and I know that further versions of the Ultimates were pretty negatively received and went down some pretty dark paths as well, but this 12 issues is like a really, really propulsively written story, in that not a lot of plot is happening for a lot of the time, so you're just kind of examining the way that this team would be put together, and why this team would be put together, and how what would motivate these different characters, what they would be like in this situation in a more realistic world. All of that stuff is fascinating. But that is it for this week's show. Don't forget that our next episode will be focused on X-Men 2, or X2, X-Men United, or one of the various horrible titles that this film had. We'll stick with either X2 or X-Men 2. I can't go with X-Men United. Sounds like a football team, doesn't it? If you're enjoying this show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice. And you can support us on Patreon by heading to patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. You can find more episodes of the show at cinematicmultiverse.com. And you can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter at @CU_podcast. Or send us an email to cinematicuniversepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.